In other words, what's the question of sex being enjoyed? So the whole thing is leading up to orgasm. Then what is orgasm? It's one split second. When I say split, I mean that as a double entendre. Split because as soon as I get there, it's like, oh boy, this is it. Here we go. This is what we've been leading up to. This is the whole symphony has been, you know, ready for this one note. Like, what is that Schubert's Surprise Symphony? You know, that boom, right? The whole symphony's leading up to this, and we're fixing it. Wait, I don't want to yet. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. If you do, it's over. But if I don't, I don't enjoy it. If you do, it's over. If I don't, I don't enjoy it. Isn't it? And holding off is like all pain, practically speaking, right, to hold off. And then for it to be over is like, oh. And this schizophrenia people call pleasure. And the game is that I can be something that I'm really not. That I can be some kind of number one. Basically, we're playing God. And here, we create situations in which, you know, we're number one. Baby, you're my everything. That means we're trying to be Krishna. And it is by Krishna's arrangement that we have this opportunity. And it's by Krishna's arrangement that he creates this illusion that's so realistic that I can sit here and tell you this. You can think about it. You can even argue if you want to. You won't be able to defeat it. The fact that you are not your body. You'll hear it. It'll make perfectly good sense. I've talked with professors. I've argued with philosophers, logicians. That no one has ever defeated because they can't. But you'll sit here, listen to this philosophy, and in all likelihood, after the feast, you'll walk out of the door and go back acting like you're a woman, a 20-year-old woman or whatever, right? That illusion is so powerful because every soul has free will. He can choose to live truth, or he can choose to pretend a dream in which he extrapolates the reality of his own being vastly beyond what it really is. He cannot admit that he's a part of something bigger. Like the hand is a part of the body. It has meaning, it has identification, and it's experiencing happiness in relationship to the body. It gives food to the mouth. The mouth passes to the stomach. Stomach digests, then goes through, right, and the blood is bringing energy to the hand. If you cut the hand off, it withers up and dies. It has no meaning. After a while, it becomes so dried and that you couldn't even identify it. But this situation of consciousness that we are in the material world is like that, a kind of separated consciousness. Now, Krishna consciousness means the original consciousness of the self. This is not some religion. We are not a religion as opposed to Christianity or Judaism. We're not trying to convert people from being Catholics to being Krishna. It doesn't have anything to do with religion, ultimately. Krishna consciousness is the original consciousness of the soul, of the self, myself. I've been thousands of, just like you've reincarnated every 7 years. People say, yeah, why do you believe in reincarnation? You're reincarnating all the time. You reincarnate at least every 7 years because you're in a totally different body. You understand? There's not one molecule there that was there when you were 10. Not one. You're in a different body, an entirely, 100%, absolutely different body. That is reincarnation. And then there is the discontinuous kind of reincarnation when your karmic clock that causes you to think you are this character in this play for what we call a lifetime, when that clock runs out according to your karma, which is determined the kind of life that you, so you're famous as Elvis Presley, and then you croak sitting on the toilet as Elvis Presley, that's the end of your karma. And at the end of that lifetime, then you go into another body, unless you've stopped playing the game. So you've been thousands and thousands of different bodies, and you have those bodies. As I've explained before, you get a certain type of body, a man mobile, a woman mobile, a Mozart mobile, or a football player mobile, according to your desire, how you want to boogie in this world. You get the type of body that goes along with it. You get the right kind of legs, hands, eyes, right? You want to be very beautiful, you may get, if you have the karma, you may be very beautiful. And in this way, lorded over everybody. All the men are checking me out as I strut through Nittany Mall. Eat your hearts out, boys. Right? In this way, we've had so many bodies, but in every body, we experience the same frustrations. We experience the pain of birth and going through all of the ignorance of being a child, the fears, nightmares, the lack of understanding, and you can't communicate. You're crying like anything in the crib, screaming at the top of your lungs, right? And your mother thinks you're hungry. She's putting a bottle in your mouth. You've already got gas. That's why you're crying, right? She's
like, here, take this bottle and shut up. Here, you want the binky?
And you're like, ugh. Right? This is part of being childhood. It means ignorant, stupid, and you suffer a lot. Childhood is not bliss, right? Like the animals suffer a lot, right? They have worms and things, and they look up at you so sad. You know, what's wrong? But they can't tell you. Ignorance is not bliss, not by a long shot.
Since you've mentioned the Pittsburgh Steelers helmet, do you ever go to a football game?
No.
To a movie?
No, we don't engage in what we consider to be more or less diversionary type activities. There is a goal of human life. Human life is meant to be serious. That doesn't mean morose. But we experience our pleasure on a higher level. There's sensual pleasure, intellectual pleasure like that. But as I was saying earlier, the self is actually the spirit soul. And the pleasure for the soul is not in seeking some temporary gratification in the play of colors or some configuration of bodies running across lines on a pasture, but the pleasure of the self is found in pleasing God or Krishna, just like my hand gives the food to the mouth. So there is no question, actually, of our being happy. We may divert ourselves temporarily, but there is no question of happiness apart from serving God.
I can't help but notice that there seems to be a paradox in that you are a Krishna leader with your robes, but you have an extravagant digital watch on.
Extravagant. This is a $12 Armatron watch from David Weiss, and I use it so that I got here at 5:30 this afternoon instead of 5:45. There again, we utilize those things which can be engaged in Krishna's service. We're not impractical. In other words, a watch is not sinful as it sits there ticking away. The question is, how do we use it?
A football game is not sinful.
Not so much that it is sinful, but if in watching the football game I forget what is my eternal nature, trying to find pleasure in a few minutes of this or that on my way to old age, disease, and death, and another birth of an undetermined nature, then it's actually a most improvident engagement.
Mm-hmm. A priest would, in many cases, feel the same sort of love of Christ that you feel of Krishna, but yet would not feel bad about going to something that you might consider a diversionary pleasure.
But in the Bible, Jesus says, if the love of the world is in you, the love of the Father isn't. And the first commandment is love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, and soul. It's kind of hard for me to imagine Jesus Christ and St. Peter sitting up in the stands, you know, like calling for a blitz and screaming, nail him, nail him.
We have the level of vision in which we see ourselves, not as individuals, but as Americans. And therefore, when in our frustration, having gotten our butts kicked in Vietnam and ignominiously leaving with the last few people grabbing hold of the helicopter and kicking off the, you know, our buddies, our ex-buddies, now the gooks, just get off my leg and let me get out of here, right? So ignominious defeat, and everybody's so embarrassed and this and that. So now we have this nice fantasy where either Rambo or Chuck Norris or somebody goes back and whoops them all, and we can lay it to rest, right? So there's so many of them. I think someone was telling me, even this guy, what is this detective in Hawaii that drives the Ferrari, right? He went back too and beat up some more of them. So Magnum P.I. So in this way, we're able to overcome some of these problems we had. I'd like for you to consider for a moment that this Americanism is an extension of a basic assumption that we have about the self, and that accepting this, all of these things become possible, these absurdities, these absurd fantasies. These are all based on a certain concept of the self that makes up the fundamental element of our point of view, and that is that the self is the body or a combination of the body and mind. Right? In other words, this is me. And therefore, if I'm woman, then I'm attracted by this maha neck. Right? Or as a man, I think, yeah, right, we're getting here, we'll buy me a bow and this and that. And in this way, or as Americans, we're thinking, well, it's great to be able to live out this fantasy even if we're not. All of this means we accept the self to be the body. Which is very interesting, because in terms of order, in terms of time, in other words, the way that we conceive, right, we're past Newtonian physics now, folks. It's no longer the 19th century, right? We've come into 20th century physics now. Our concept of order, which means an acknowledgement of time, the working of time, means that we have acknowledged that everything here is in constant flux. It is process. It is constantly changing. That is the nature of them, right? E equals mc squared. It's energy in flux. Now forget your absolute ideas of everything being frozen. Your baby's going to be your baby forever. Your baby may change tomorrow. When she goes to see Rambo and comes back and sees your skinny legs, she may not love you anymore, right? Everything changes. So that is the nature of material existence.
Last night they invited us to this party next door. So we cooked some pakoras and went over there. And I stayed over there and talked with these people. Sankarshan Prabhu and I went over and talked with these people. It was nice. We talked for, you know, actually they were all talking all this boring nonsense. So when we went over there, everybody wanted to talk. So we were talking with people. We had a whole crowd of people around us. We were talking for an hour and a half. So, because what are they saying? Did you see what she was wearing? Yeah. Did you see what, do you hear what she said that he said that you, I mean, right? So we were staying over there while they were drunk all their beer and everything. We stationed ourselves right next to the keg. inadvertently, that's just where we ended up. Anyway, the point is, I was talking to this girl, and after I explained to her why we dress the way we do, why we live the lives we do, she was saying, well, that seems to make sense. She said, you must think we're pretty weird. And I told her, well, no, it's not so. In other words, you know, at this point, I've seen enough enough of this to where it's not strange, you know, although I do think it's very unfortunate and sad. And I said, I mean, come on, just, I mean, what are you doing? You're standing, here's this big jug of stuff, and you just keep filling up a glass and pouring it in you to just, like, to change, right? To just, like, zap out a few junctions in the brain, you know, like somebody just reaches in the computer and pulls out a few, right? So the computer can, like, be down for a while, right? So the computer doesn't have to work. Right, the computer says it's down. We'll have to wait until this afternoon to run the invoices, right? That's all they're doing. Just pour it up. You got to get enough alcohol in you to freak out the circuits, right? So you pour and you pour and you pour until you hit the right amount. And then, oh, success. I did it. I ruined the machine. Great. I can't think. That's exactly what it means. I can't think. I can't actually acknowledge. Why? Because if I thought, what would I realize? I'm standing out here in somebody's backyard. Whoopee. There's the clothesline. There's the sidewalk. There's the charcoal briquettes. Whoopee. Right? And they're saying the same thing I heard last week. Whoopee. And I'll talk to this girl and I'll lay all this stuff on her. We'll go home and have sex. Whoopee. So I can't stand to think about it. When I look at it and I see that's all it is, the broom, the clothesline, the grass, the lawn chair that got bent and won't fold out anymore, right? When I look and see that's actually all that's going on here in the material world, and, oh God, I can't stand. So I've got to put a glow around the whole thing, right? So I pour everything in until I get the glow, and then I look and I think, wow, look at that lawn chair, right? Or you get stoned, right? And you're like, wow. You check out that clothesline, right? I mean, look at the way that, like that knot on the end, you know? It kind of reminds me of Moby Dick or something, you know? But what is there? Nothing but a clothesline, right? That's what we can't admit. The material world is nothing but dead matter. The bodies are dead machines. Our little life is just some little nonsense thing, machines going around bumping into each other for 20, 30, 50, 100 years. Machines break down, croak, return to ashes, right? And I move on to my... That's what we don't want to admit. We're not Krishna.
Copies of Stambadas lectures can be obtained at the cost of $3 each. For a complete list, write to Touchstone Productions, 103 East Hamilton Avenue, State College, Pennsylvania, 16801.